This is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
It is time, everybody. You look forward to it every week, just like we do. When you get a chance to speak to a man of his stature, his caliber, you know it's a big event. Dave's over there cracking
okay,
up.
Now you should, even be get watching, it. You should be watching the video stream and seeing
I can't even
how
get
much
through
I'm
it.
Laughing.
Dave's over there, his shoulders bouncing up and down laughing. He is a star of stage and screen and really the highlight of our week, each and every week. And he's with us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. The one, the only, Paul Moyer is here, ladies and gentlemen. Hello, Paul.
Happy Thursday. Thanks for having me.
How are you?
I'm doing well. It feels like we haven't talked in a while, has it? But
Dave and I were talking before the show. It was like, man, I feel like we've been breaking down this potential Saints matchup for 2 weeks now. Yeah. It's like I'm running out of words about this thing. But before we get to that, let's talk about what happened last week since we haven't spoken with you. I came out of that game a little confused, Paul, only because I didn't really know how to feel about it. They did play better. But they still lost. And I feel like, you know, those sort of moral victories should be reserved for teams that you don't expect to win. The playoff window isn't open yet. There are young teams building and things like that. How did you feel about last week's game?
Yeah, it was interesting because when the Kraken opened the season and lost and everybody was giddy and happy, and I said, God, when's the last time the Seahawks have had a loss? And people were okay with it. You know, we had to really go back to about 2012 against Atlanta. But it did feel that way in that, hey, we were probably undermanned, you know, certainly without your quarterback and top running back, defense struggling, and to play the way they did, and particularly to rally in the second half. I'm more hopeful. I really feel like, wow, Trey Brown looks like a corner. And it's more than that where I'm excited for him. I got to temper this a little because he's a rookie, but his feel in the short time that we saw on Sunday we got a Monday game coming up was what we saw in college and why they drafted him, and that he can hold off routes and zones, and he has the ability to read the quarterback, and he has a good feel of when to start to widen in zones. You know, that takes a lot of time to teach, and here's a guy that he has that ability right from the get-go. So I'm excited what he brings to the table. And, you know, I think for the first time, you know, we know what our identity should be, and now they got to keep doing it. You know, we've got to run the football offensively. I mean, that's just point blank. We're just we're not ready to be that team that throws it 80% of the time. I don't believe so. So I'm hopeful. This is a huge game. I don't remember last time we've been underdogs by 4.5 points on a primetime game at home, but we are.
Yeah, I was the same thing, man. I mean, shoot. I mean, maybe they've been underdogs, but like by that much, it was 5 at one point, 5.5. But, Paul, how did you feel about Geno coming out of that performance? Because he was 72%. You know, he had the fumble, but still, you know, I felt a lot better. I was pretty optimistic about that loss. I thought they were probably going to get blown out just because, you know, it's going to be his first time as a starter. I thought he played pretty well. How'd you feel?
Yeah, I think, you know, coming out of the Ram game, we felt pretty good about him. And we talked about this in our pregame show that, and I think Ray mentioned it, he goes, we don't need him to win the game. We just need to make sure he doesn't lose it. Yeah. And I thought for the most part he did that. Obviously, the fumble at the end of the game was a bummer because, you know, you fought so hard and you have a chance to go down and score and win. And look, that's ultimately what you're judged on. Even as a backup, you know, we've had the ball twice with an opportunity to go win down by less than 6 points against the Rams, tied up against, Pittsburgh last week. That's kind of what you hope for. And, you know, hopefully he can close the deal. This is going to be a tough game for him defensively. I mean, they're really good. They're going to get after him, give him a lot of different looks also. They're going to be a very difficult look for him because we're going to have struggled to run the football, I think. And I say I think. I've said that before. Their rankings are really good. I'm curious to see what kind of game plan we have against them in the running game. But, you know, again, this isn't a team that I want to try and throw the ball, you know, 70, 80% of the time. We really need to be able to try to have balance this week.
Yeah, but and you just hit on the numbers, and Dave and I have been talking about those. I mean, they're number two in the league against the rush. They're number tied for second in points allowed, but they're down toward the bottom of the league in pass defense, which I get the feeling. You don't want to put it on Geno's arm and have him pass you to victory, but the numbers tell you that might have to be the way. So it sounds like if it is, in fact, let's just hypothetically say they just stuff the run, nothing's happening. You've got faith that Geno could pass this team to a win?
Yeah, to me, it's more just protection. I just don't want to have to throw it all the time. I mean, we saw the first half last week against Pittsburgh. You know, that doesn't always work out well with backup quarterbacks. You can't put the whole weight of the world on their shoulders. There's a reason why they're backups. Even though he's more than capable of winning games for us, he needs everybody else to rally around it. But it's a statistic, though, Bob, too. Now, after six games, I don't get too caught up in statistics in that, oh, gee, they're second against yards per attempt and four total yards or vice versa in one of those statistics defensively. That doesn't mean we can't run on them. You know, that doesn't mean we don't try to run on them. And I like what we did in the second half against Pittsburgh. You know, we really just said, we're going to man up and we're going to play power football. There's a lot of teams out there do a really good job against the run because they're weak against the pass. No one's attempting to throw on them, or, you know, their teams are, you know, behind and they've got to throw. In this case, I think we can run it. It's just the yards, I think, will be tough. So, I think he's capable, but no, we still have to be able to run it, Bob, for us to win this game.
Yeah, Paul, do you ever remember, we never looked at stats, right? I mean, as players, you were just looking
at... As coaches, I did, Dave.
Yeah?
That's all I looked at, because that's what I had to hang my hat on.
Yeah, but I mean, as far as
2-14.
Yeah, but as far as a player goes, you know, when you're going in...
No, I never looked at them.
Yeah, so you have an idea of, you know, oh, okay, they're pretty good, but then, you know, you see everybody's pretty good. So, yeah, every week poses some kind of a challenge. But, you know, we've been talking a lot about Rashad Penny because hopefully he's going to be back. Just curious your thoughts. You know, we hear that, you know, they possibly wanted Nick Chubb and then decided to take Rashad Penny. I was going back and looking at his numbers at San Diego State. I think he only missed three games. And, you know, it looked like, you know, Nick Chubb had, what, 7-8 games that he missed. Penny got a really high medical rating and everything going in. What do you think they need to do with him? The other stat I heard today, Paul, was that he has never had more than 15 carries in a game since he's been a Seahawk.
That's, you know, partly is Chris Carson. You know, we remember when we drafted him, it was a need. When you draft a need, you often draft it higher than you normally would. It was a need. We were, you know, we didn't have any running backs at the time. We weren't sure about Chris Carson. So they went out and got Penny. And when you watch Penny coming out of college, and here's a guy who returned six or seven kickoff returns, if I remember, for touchdowns. Yeah. You know, he was explosive. When he hit a seam, he was gone. And the Seahawks were looking for that type of explosive running back. Chris Carson the next year, you know, obviously took control of that competition and has become a fantastic running back, particularly when he's healthy. So part of for Penny is, you know, Carson stepped up and he's become the man. The other part is the injuries. I always say, I just don't know yet from Penny. I would love to see him healthy and get a ton of carries or different types of things. Right now, he's just a luxury. You know, at some point when Chris Carson comes back, Penny more than likely will not be here next year. So to me, it's just, hey, play the best you can. Let's get the most out of him this year. I hope he makes a breakout the last, you know, or at least the second half of the season and can catapult that to a huge contract with another team. But I would like to see him healthy and play because at this point, we just need explosive players. And again, it doesn't matter statistics, doesn't matter number of touches you get, whatever you get And when you get in the game, make the most of it. And I think that's where Penny has to be at this point in his career.
Yeah, really quick, Bob. I'd forgotten about that part. He only returned two punts his entire career at San Diego State, one of them for a touchdown. Mm. And then he had seven kickoff returns for touchdowns and like 2,500 yards. So, I mean, he was healthy and got one of the best, I guess, medical grades. That's what John Boyle told us. And he had all the numbers to prove it. So, would just love to see it.
There's no exact science.
Yeah.
This is what's so hard. I mean, you're looking at guys and they're productive, and the Seahawks they rarely grab a guy high who hasn't had a lot of playing time or production in college. You know, so you're looking at that. I mean, all of it was there for a Penny. It just hasn't worked out. It happens. And again, it's why I never like need picks. To me, Ifedi was a need pick. Penny was a need pick. And it doesn't mean that, you know, we just picked them to pick them. The need was we really need a tackle or a guard at the time when we grabbed Ifedi. We really need a running back in this situation. We can't wait. And it's the guy we want. And so do we grab him now in the first round or our first pick, or do we try and hope that they slide to our next pick? It's one of those where you go, this is our pick. Here's the guy we want. We're taking. And then everybody starts, was that a good value? Was there someone ahead of him, you know, that panned out? Obviously, you look at Diggs from the Cowboys right now. He should have been the first or second pick back in 2020. That other than Furrow, it may be if you needed a quarterback, but no one else has played like this guy other than Chase Young is probably up there. It just happens in life. And every team missed on Diggs, everybody, other than the Cowboys when they got a second chance at it. So, and again, Penny, again, I'm hopeful. It's just it is what it is at this point.
Last one on Penny is, and I asked Dave this, and the listeners weighed in as well, but is there anything you could see from him in these remaining 11 games that would make you go, yeah, John and Pete should think about bringing him back? Because I maintain he's auditioning for his next job. I think there's not, I don't think there's anything he could do. I think he's playing for his next team right now and putting on tape and, you know, try to get somebody interested. But what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, obviously never, you know, I guess you never say never. You know, he could become this just explosive running back, and maybe Carson's neck situation becomes a career-ending deal, and all of a sudden you look at Penny and say, well, he is the one. But let's exclude that. We have Carson signed. He's our number one running back. You're not going to pay two running backs top money. He's auditioning for another team next year unless something, you know, drastically changes. It could, but with what I have in front of me, the information, no. He more than likely will not be back next year.
Paul, what's your opinion of Jameis Winston? We go back and forth on it. We like to bring up Bob does. He likes to bring up the 30 interception.
I really enjoy bringing that up.
Yeah.
And 10, what did I say, 10 fumbles that year as well?
Yeah, 10
Nine
fumbles.
Or 10 fumbles. Yeah, he was really good.
Well, and he's thrown three picks. He's got a big arm. I was telling Bob that I wished he was a quarterback when I probably still would have dropped it, but he throws right to linebackers. And so what do you think? I mean, if that guy, I feel like that's a good matchup, especially as you mentioned earlier, our corners are playing pretty well right now.
They're playing better. I think we now have three guys there that they're confident. I am going to say this again. And I'm going to say it over and over again. The corners are not the problem with the Seahawks defense. If I see another tweet on it, I'm going to delete you and ban you for life. Do your homework.
Well,
on
get ready because it's coming,
the
Paul.
Corners.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying you want to upgrade, and I'm not saying they shouldn't play better. But with the scheme we're running, the type of passes that are thrown, the help that they're asked to get or get from the other players, the corners aren't the problem. They're part of it. You know, everybody are. But that's not it. So they are playing better than last week. I think we now have three guys they're confident in. They can run different type of coverages, and it was certainly a step in the right direction. With that being said, you know, Winston's having a pretty good year. 12 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, or wherever that number is.
Yep.
You know, in a system that is really driven on quick. I haven't heard, but it looks like, is Michael Thompson going to be back for them as well?
Thomas.
I think he is. That's a problem, because I thought he was the best wide receiver in the league before this year, or at least top three. So it's all there. James can certainly be an issue, and I'm hoping we get that reversion to the mean where he throws 3 interceptions this week and gets more of that 2-to-1 touchdown to interception ratio. So let's end up 12 touchdowns, 6 interceptions. He's hit and miss. We don't know what we're going to get. I mean, he's the ultimate in volatility, high standard deviation. Love him when he's on. You hate him when he's not. If he's on your team, again, they're more than capable. This could be a tough game. I know everybody thinks, oh, we got another home game, you know, prime time. They're 3-2. They've got a lot of athletes. It's really is going to be on their quarterback play. But I just got another feeling that we're going to play well. We're due to win. We're going to lose 3 primetime games in a row. Never happening. Not happening.
I hope you're right.
And we get 4.5 points. Come on.
I don't think they put those on the board, Paul. But
be nice if
they
did.
Don't.
Yeah.
But he's. I think they've done a nice job, Paul, just to sort of bolster your point with Jameis in limiting his exposure. They're not asking him to do a bunch. They're really leaning on their run game. I mean, you look at his game log, he's thrown 20 times, 22, 21, 23, and then the last game is the most he's passed the entire year, 30 attempts. He's still not accurate. He completed 15 of 30 in that game. He had a game where he was 11 of 22. I mean, he's still not an accurate passer. He's still prone to the turnovers, but I think what they've done well is really limiting that exposure to failure, to making that critical mistake.
Yeah, we can help in that. In that, if we're going to have to contest the short passes and force him to throw some deep ends and things like that, which is, we've been susceptible to. But that's where interceptions come, particularly if you're, you know, tight, you know, and you guys are trusting each other with your free safety and corner and going over the top and being able to jump certain routes. And, you know, I think my bigger concern is, you know, their tight ends, their running backs versus our linebackers. You know, how well do we perform there? And, you know, that's been something that we've struggled with all year. And you guys know they've got some talent on that side too. So I think it's a great game. It's a game that if we had Russell Wilson, we'd be really excited and feeling good about going into this one. But 2-4, this is must win. I mean, we have to win this one for sure. And because you got Jacksonville, you got to get to 4-4, because after the bye, you come out the gate, you're at Green Bay, and then you come back with Arizona. Yeah. Those are
brutal.
You can't be. We have to win this game if we're going to make the playoffs. And I know it's early, but realistically, statistically, we need to win this game.
Hey, just to bring you back to what you were saying about the corners, and it's not the corners. You're going to block people who say it is the corners. What, in your opinion, what is the problem? What do you see as the obvious problem with the defense?
Well, I think it's a combination of everything, and that's been my point. It's, you know, I've read some, well, the pass rush isn't there, and I got a pass rush. I mean, last week, Ben Roethlisberger set a record, completing 19 passes in a row under 10, or quick passes. Well, so if they're quick passes, which means he's just catching the ball, it's almost in today's day, it's almost a two-step drop because you're not actually under center. You're in the shotgun point of issue. You're just getting it. You're taking a step back, and the ball comes out. If you don't contest those throws, you don't allow for, you know, the pass rush to get there. Those aren't the corners' play, particularly if you're playing 3 deep zone, which, you know, is our primary defense. So if we're playing off and we're expecting underneath help on these routes to take away those, then we have to get better at that. And Bob, you've heard me. It's a combination of everything. It's understanding pattern recognition, passing things off, squeezing routes. there are times in cover two, I've said, where you do contest. You squeeze everything tight. Quarters is the same way. Everything, the three inside receivers and really between the numbers, everything is tight. And so you're forcing things more outside and deeper where you've got things over the top. But if you're going to play three deep zone, I'm bailing as my corners. That's not my play to stop a 10-yard turn route. I need help. I've got to play some cover two behind that. I've got to play some quarters where it looks like cover two, where I'm bumping around, but I'm still playing over the top. So it's coverages, it's pattern recognition, it's making sure that their linebackers and safeties and nickel are dropping to the proper depth, crowding the proper people, allowing the pass rush to get there. So I just kind of back this, but it's not the corners. I want them to play better, because if they play better, then maybe we can play more man-to-man and leave them alone. But overall, they haven't been, to me, the biggest issue.
Hey, Paul, really quick, we got to go to break here, but you've been watching the Kraken games? Bob and I got a chance to go over to the arena and watch the Foo Fighters. It's pretty cool. And how much have you been following them?
Well, I follow them and I watch it, but, man, I'm lost because I just don't know the names yet.
Yeah.
And I haven't gotten into it. I think Saturday when we – is Saturday the home opener?
Yes. Yep.
It's Saturday.
Vancouver.
I think Saturday, and then for us to be able to get into our own arena and then finally see that is going to take me to another level. Yeah. Right now I'm living off of other people. I'm living off my son and friends who are into hockey and keeping me up to date. But I'm watching it. But if they win or lose – I'm just not even remotely emotionally invested into this yet. And you obviously are, because I can hear the groan.
No, I'm groaning because the reason I'm groaning is I thought maybe I could get in on a text group for hockey. And it sounds like you already are relying on your son and your friends. So
Dave's feeling left out.
I guess I'm missing out. I'll just be the Seahawk guy, I guess.
Your buddy of 30-plus years, and you can't find room for him in a group text somewhere? Come on, man.
So here's what I'm thinking. Bob, I don't have your cell phone. I always have to pass things to Dave. And I said, will you slip a note to Bob and tell him I just really loved his work? Or hey, do you mind if we talk about this?
I forgot to give him those.
We form our own Thursday 3 p.m. 710 ESPN group text, and we focus on the Kraken. Okay. It's the three of us.
We've got to throw Lefko in there.
Yeah, we need somebody who knows what should be happening on the ice.
Expert.
Yeah. Mike for sure. By the way, Hawks live tonight. We're going to talk. We're going to go in the room with the offensive line. We're going to have Jamarco Jones on tonight, and nice. And see as they start to continue to get better on the offensive line. We'll find out what they're doing.
Great. There you go. Seahawks live at 7 o'clock tonight. Paul Moyer, Michael Bumpus, and Jamarco Jones, the guest. So make sure you tune in tonight.
Every Thursday night.
You can find them here every Thursday with Wyman and Bob. It's always great to talk to you, Paul. We appreciate it, and we'll talk next week.
I appreciate it. Go Hawks.
There you go. Thanks, Paul Moyer with us, as he is every week. Again, 7 o'clock tonight, Hawks live. Jamarco Jones will be the guest of Paul Moyer and Michael Bumpus. All right, coming up, it's a star-studded class of Major League Baseball free agents, but who are the Mariners going after? We're going to dig into that next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Our thanks to Paul Moyer for joining us in the previous segment. Always good to catch up with him. Wyman and Bob is presented by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort. Coming up at the top of the hour, the Professor John Clayton will join us on the program. Stay tuned for that conversation. Meanwhile, we were talking Mariners a little bit earlier. Jerry DePoto on with Mike Salk today. And a lot of the big names that are available out there are shortstops. We really like the shortstop that's here. In J.P. Crawford. Now, he's not an offensive juggernaut. He's not a guy who's, you know, in terms of production compared to some of the, you know, Correa or Seager, some of these other guys, he doesn't have those numbers. But, man, you just love what he brings to this team. And Jerry was asked about that spot and, you know, some of the people out there. Here's what he said about JP?
You know, for us, one of the key elements is we have a shortstop that we love. And, you know, JP's our shortstop, and we feel like he is, you know, an anchor on our infield and an emotional leader for our team. So one of the things that's important to us is finding a player who is adaptable and willing to move around the field and maybe get a little uncomfortable. And there's some of those guys that already have done that in their career. Guys like Semien and Baez have done that.
So it sounds like, you know, I think he's making it pretty clear, like whoever we bring in needs to be willing to play maybe second or third, depending on how this shakes out with Toro. But JP is going to remain the shortstop.
Yeah.
You know, and some of the names out there are shortstops, and like I said, Carlos Correa, Corey Seager. He brought up Javi Baez. He brought up Marcus Semien, who's been playing second, but is a shortstop. Trevor Story. So a lot of these bigger names that are out there. You know, I'd be curious to see. I heard them on the broadcast of the Astros game, not last night. I think the one prior, but they were saying about him moving forward. You know, whether he's with the Astros or somewhere else, he wants to play shortstop till he's done playing. He's a big dude, and once you start losing your range, I mean, you just naturally, you're going to move to a different spot if you start losing your ability to cover the amount of ground you need to play that spot. So I think it's a nice wish, but that to me sounds like a guy who's not willing to go somewhere else and go, okay, I'll play second or I'll play third, wherever they need him.
Yeah.
Sounds like I'm set at playing shortstop, and I don't envision myself in any other spot.
Right. What do you think about, like, the first and third baseman as far as – because that's, you know, as far as infielders go, you know, you've got to replace Kyle. And mm-hmm. Ty France is going to be, you know
– he's in the mix somewhere.
One or the other, right? So, you know, would you rather – I like him at first base.
Yeah. I think he played a couple games. I have to go back and look at third. I don't recall what he looks like at third base, to be honest.
I don't either.
Because all I remember is the remark from Divish when we had him on, and I asked him, we asked him about, you know, hey, what do you think of him at third base? He says, I think as a third baseman, he's a really good DH, which is not a compliment.
You know, if you would have told or asked Divish at that point, well, what do you think he'd look like at first? He would probably say even worse things. You know,
maybe he would have. I mean, who knows? But he seems to have found a really nice groove at first base. You got from, I wonder what he's going to look like, to, he looks pretty good. And then by the end of the year, he is really good.
But you would still take Evan White.
If Evan White could hit. Yeah, because I think Ty France is very good at first base. He ended the season very good. I don't think he's special defensively, and maybe he does get there. If we're just talking about who they are right now, I think already Evan White is a special defensive first baseman. But if he can't hit, it's too much of a drop off. You can't have somebody on the roster that's hitting 150. You just can't have a guy in the lineup every day like that, especially at first base, a traditional power spot. So I root for him. I think Evan White has got a lot of ability, a lot of talent. We saw it. I mean, a Gold Glover his first year. So He's a special defensive player, but he's an absolute liability at the plate. And the luxury of this is that the Mariners have is Ty France is that good. There's zero urgency to rush Evan White. You can let him just hang with the AAA team until he gets where he needs to get to offensively, confidence-wise, health-wise, whatever needs to be rectified. You've got that time.
Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like Toro can develop into a good, reliable second baseman. I mean, he's such an intelligent dude. He is, you know, got a great attitude. He's just a very well-rounded guy. I feel like he's going to be able to develop into that. Would you bank on that?
No.
Yeah, you're not sold on his...
Nah, I didn't like how he looked at second.
Yeah.
He never looked comfortable. He looked very mechanical and rigid and just... there wasn't a flow to the way he played, and the way he threw the ball looked awkward.
It's almost the kind of a style that you have, you know, playing that position. And you're right. That's a good way to put it. Yeah. He was very mechanical.
Yeah. I think I talked to you about this before, but I remember, you know, being a pitcher as a kid and my dad saying, just throw the ball. Stop aiming it. Almost like you're shot putting. Your motion is weird. You can just see when somebody's not just, hey, just firing the ball, just rock and fire. He didn't ever look like that. He looked like he was aiming the ball, and sometimes it would take some of the steam off the ball because it seemed like he was almost shot putting it. You know what I mean? The
Totally.
The look was weird to me.
Well, and I even saw once, because a lot of times you have to throw from a different arm slot, right?
Mm-hmm.
But even times where he would ground it, glove it, you know, right off the ground and then have time to throw. I saw one time he opened his foot up a little bit and then the throw was a little bit off. You know, I'm just like, is he thinking too much maybe? Or...
Yeah,
wasn't natural.
Yeah, he just and listen, I'll never doubt Perry Hill because of what we've seen from J.P. Crawford and B, what he said about him. His words, he saved my career. Those are J.P. Crawford's words because we've talked about this a million times. When he came over from the Phillies, the knock on him was his defense. People saying, I don't know if his glove plays at this level. He's got some holes in his defensive game, but yeah, he can hit. It was, you know, now it's the opposite. I mean, you don't worry about him hitting. He's not a power bat by any stretch, and his hitting certainly got better, but he's a brilliant defensive player now. And he said flat out, Perry Hill saved my career. So I'll never doubt him, just to answer your question about Toro, if he really just focused in on him and said, hey, we're grinding this every day. You and I are going to get together in the offseason or whatever it's going to take. We're going to turn you into a very natural second baseman. I wouldn't bet against that, but
yeah.
Maybe he's better suited, you know, depending on who they want to go after in the free agent market. Maybe they look at him and say, nah, he's more of a natural third baseman. Let's go after somebody that's a shortstop that'd be willing to play second base.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's a better option for him. I'm not sure who they're zeroing in on, though.
Yeah, I would love to think that Perry Hill and JP and Toro are out, Abraham Toro, are working together in the offseason. I feel like, because JP's got just such a flow and a style. He's, like I said, he's so cool to watch. It's like Robinson Cano.
Yeah, it looks easy. Doesn't look like they're putting effort into it. I mean, he's got a great arm. It doesn't look – some guys you can tell when they're really heaving the ball, and other guys it just sort of just pops out of their hand. That's how JP looks.
Plus, I would love to see Abraham Toro develop into – just because there was such a overreaction at that time. And I'll say, rightfully so, when he was traded for Gravy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know. I like to see – it's like Jerry's already been vindicated, but I mean, just so people aren't so sure, you know, when that happens, people overreact, I think, a little bit, and they think, oh, who is this guy? I've never heard of him. I would just love to see him work out and develop into like the second baseman here for the next, you know, 7 to 10 years.
Yeah, I almost feel like it's more likely he'd be a third baseman because that's his background. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen him play third base though, so I don't really know what he looks like as a third day in, day out third baseman. But maybe everything we're saying he doesn't have at second base, he's got at third base. He feels better. He looks more natural. Maybe it's just a natural. Obviously, he's not going to play there with Seager. So he kind of – his spot was second. Like, that's the open spot we have. That's where you're playing. So I give him credit for it. But maybe they're looking at it going, you know, he's a more natural third baseman. Let's look at some of these guys we know would be amenable to playing second base.
Well, I guess they better figure it out here pretty soon, right? Because you need to go after a second baseman or third baseman.
Yeah, or a shortstop that's willing to be a second baseman.
Yeah.
Yeah, because JP's their guy. Sounds like Jerry's pretty set on that. So there you go. All right, coming up, Saints defense, they know exactly how they want to play the Seahawks. We'll tell you what we're talking about next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob, brought to you by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
We got the professor, John Clayton, joining us at the top of the hour. Stay tuned for that, and you guys know the drill. If you've got a question for John, you can text those in. I'd wait a few minutes, but if you want to develop that question, get prepared, write the number down. Here you go, 206-421-3776. That's 421-ESPN. That's powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. That's where you send your text for the professor coming up at the top of the hour. But the Saints defense, we talked about. They know their strengths. It's they're stopping the run game, second in the entire league in terms of yardage allowed against the run. And Demario Davis, a guy you talked about, a guy that's been highlighted a bit with that team, talked about the identity on D is very clear to them.
The thing that we've always been able to tip our hat on is our ability to stop the run. And if you can make teams one-dimensional in this league, you're going to be all right. There's some other things that we need to continue to clean up, even in the run game. But we have a good, solid foundation, and we want to keep building. And that's the thing that you're able to do. Once you have a solid identity and a good foundation to build on, that's what you need, because you need to be constantly ascending as the season goes on. And we know October is a very important month in football.
Did he say tip your hat on?
Was that Jake Heaps? Are we sure that wasn't Jake? Something you could lean your hat on?
Is that what he said? Tip your hat on? Is that what he said in the beginning? Let's hear the very beginning.
The thing that we've always been able to tip our hat on is...
Yeah.
Well, okay. So
you
they
know what, though? I wouldn't say that to his face.
No, I'd say you're right. I tip my hat on that as well.
He's 6'2", 248.
But so they're clear on, you know, what they do well and what they don't do well. Obviously, he said there are things they need to clean up. I assume he's talking about their pass defense, which is not good. But in terms of allowing points, they're very good. In terms of rushing yards, second best, 79 yards a game is what they're allowing.
Yeah.
So what's the difference between being patient and just being stubborn and saying it's not working? I wonder if they have that conversation, like X amount of plays or X amount of yardage, or, hey, man, if we're three and out. We talk about that with the pass. You pass too much, defense is back on the field immediately. Well, you're not out there that much longer if you run it three times and you don't come up with a first down either. So,
yeah. Well, I'll say this. A lot of times, and I'm trying to remember, gosh, I want to say it was 2019 also, and that was the last time the Seahawks played the Saints, but I want to say that there was a game that year where they were up against somebody who was just phenomenal run defense-wise, and they just ran all over them. Because, you know, number one, I would say it's early.
Yeah.
You know, so...
And the Saints have played one fewer game. They've played five. They're coming off a bye week. So that's five. Those stats are five games worth.
Right. And then, you know, they played against their Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers, and that was obviously just a fluke of a game. That was weird, you know, when we talked to Mike Triplett about that, you know, like what a strange game that was, because that really shouldn't have affected Green Bay. And they only put 3 points up. I mean, that was just one of those where, you know, so I feel like early on, some of those numbers aren't necessarily representative. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
As far as the run stats go. But obviously they've got some players like DeMario Davis. I mean, this guy's he's a monster. And, you know, you look at, like, he's 250 pounds. I mean, that's like what I played at, and you know, a linebacker like me, I mean, I was a two down linebacker, as Mark Schlereth would call maybe a one down linebacker sometimes, but but this guy can fly all over the field. They got Cam Hayward, you know, they're getting Davenport back, it looks like, their defensive end, who was a first round draft choice. So, you know, I think a lot of times you just have to beat one guy. You know, if Damian Lewis is able to get a win on DeMario Davis and, you know, get past him to the second level, then, you know, it could be off to the races. And all of a sudden you find yourself having success against another team. So I just think that'll be interesting, because we've talked about how it feels like we've been talking about this game for 2 weeks. And, you know, I feel like by the time we get there Monday, it's going to be like, it'll be very interesting to see, okay, when they run the ball, first of all, is this because the Seahawks running game isn't working, or is it because their defense is so unbelievably good?
Yeah. So what?
But that, I mean, that's
I'm trying to figure out patience and stubbornness with a running game, because
yeah.
I think that could be tested if that Saints defense lives up to the billing. Hey, we're really good at stopping the run. Not so great against the pass, but we don't allow points and we don't allow rushing yards. So if they live up to that, and let's just say they're just, whether it's Collins or Penny or whoever's running the ball, and it's just not working, I'm just wondering at what point. I know you can't be one-dimensional. You have to. The threat of the run can be just as valuable as the actual run itself. But I think that's what's frustrated Seahawks fans in the past. It feels like they've been banging their head into a wall. It's not working, but you're doing the same thing over and over.
Yeah. I sure wish they had Eskridge back. That fly sweep presents a lot of problems in the run game. And if you can get that where that's a real threat. I mean, against Indianapolis – twice he beat their best player, Darius Leonard. Now, it's a linebacker still, but Eskridge was able to outrun him twice for 20 yards total, 10 yards each time. And that opened up the rest of the offense as far as the running game. Now, all of a sudden, you fake that, and then you can, you know, run it to the other side. Then there's a screen off of it. It's too bad that they don't have that option, because that's what you would want to do to this defense, try to split them in half.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the fly sweep does. But, yeah, I at what point, I mean, 5 3 and outs? How about four? Maybe three?
And I know it's a very general question because you're not just going to go, okay, well, unless you're down 21 to nothing, you're not going to just abandon the run. But
I'm bringing that up because that happened.
Yeah.
5-3 and outs against San Francisco, right?
It was brutal.
Yeah, so yeah, I don't think it's going to be that crazy of a thing where it's like, okay, we're going to come out there and run it every time until, but, you know, I feel like they are going to, you know, at the end of the day, they're going to want to tip their hat or hang their, what's it?
Tip.
What is it again? What did he say?
Tip their
lean
hat.
Our hat? Tip our hat?
Here, let me see.
The thing that we've always been able to tip our hat on is.
He wanted to hang his hat. Yeah, he wanted to hang his hat. Yeah. But at the end of the day, yeah, they want to be able to hang their hat on the running game.
Tip their hat on it, whatever.
Right.
Let them do what they want with their hat.
I thought that was pretty encouraging, though, what they did against the Steelers. And again, I know that they weren't great numbers-wise on defense, but sure is some talent there. And if they can get that going on this defense, and now all of a sudden, you know, it could be like one of those blip games where the Saints look back and go, yeah, remember how good we were on run D and – yeah, the Seahawks got us.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I hope they do. I hope it's, again, they're looking back going, what did we do that night? What happened?
I don't think that there's a whole bunch to give you a lot of confidence that the Seahawks will do that. But,
you know, they're capable.
We're going to find out.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. We'll talk more about that coming up with the professor. If you guys have questions for John Clayton, text them in now, 206-421-3776. That's 421-3776. ESPN, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. It's coming your way next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.